It's been a long week. We have talked about Southern hospitality this week, just how long I-85 might be closed, and as we do every Friday, we have gathered a group of very smart people to help us kick back, unwind, and think about what the heck happened since Monday. It is time for the break room.
Figures at Fox News have dealt with numerous allegations regarding sexual assault and sexual harassment.
The only thing I ask is, out of the 450 homes we build, one be given to a disadvantaged family from the inner city.
That's great. So the other 449 families live in fear? Is that what we're saying? I mean, come on.
We have unfinished business, I and he.
He and me.
Don't you talk to me about grammar.
Joining us in the break room, Natalie Pavelski. She's Vice President for Cater Communications. Tamika DePriest is Senior Director of Marketing at Emory University. John Jackson, veteran and farmer out in Milledgeville. And Kalina Baller is filmmaker and podcast producer. And John is joining us by Skype. So welcome, everyone.
Happy Friday,
Celeste. Happy Friday.
Hello.
Happy Friday, guys.
Well, let's start with looking back a week or so to April Fool's Day this past weekend. If you haven't noticed, there is a very crowded race to replace Tom Price in the 6th District. One of them is a guy named Bob Gray, Republican. On Saturday, he claimed he'd been endorsed by his rival Republican Karen Handel in that race for the 6th District, and he even created a fake ad.
Bob is a strong conservative. He's got nearly 30 years of experience in the private sector, and he loves Johns Creek. So be sure to vote. Again, this is Karen Handel asking you to join me in supporting Bob Gray.
I'm Bob Gray, and I approve this message.
Okay, to be clear, that was not Karen Handel, and she did not endorse her rival, and she was not amused. So do we think this was all in good fun, or was it actually dirty politics?
I mean, call me old-fashioned, Celeste, but I actually think that somebody running for office or who has political office should not lie to the public about things of consequence.
He says it was a joke.
Dirty, dirty, dirty. It was fake news, fake news. Even on April Fool's Day.
Okay, I appreciated this joke. That said, I had a joke, April Fool's joke, go horribly wrong when I was young. I pretended one of my cousins died from choking. I ran upstairs and like screaming with my sister to his mom and my mom, and I was like, oh my god, he's dead, he's dead, he's dead. And so after a few minutes of them like crying and screaming over his body, he jumps up like, oh, April Fool's. Ever since then, because the punishment was so severe,
I should not have played
another April Fool's joke. That said, I understand why he thought it would be fun, like in jest, but yeah, these kinds of things do have consequences.
John, what do you think? Was this a joke?
You know, I like April Fool's jokes. I think in this situation, you know, it was politically convenient to do it on April Fool's. So, you know, it is what it is. I mean, myself, a couple of months ago, TED's Talk approached me and said, hey, we want you to do a TED's Talk on April 1st. And I'm like, really? I don't think so. And I just did one actually over at Emory. And right up to the day, I thought it was still like, this is a joke, you know, but I completed it. So,
I guess it wasn't.
It volleys on both sides of the fence, pretty much.
All right, so let's turn to something that is definitely not funny. The Fox Network has a problem with sexual harassment. The news outlet has paid millions of dollars in settlements, and they've lost millions of dollars in advertising since sexual harassment claims specifically against Bill O'Reilly were made public. Mercedes, Hyundai, BMW, T. Rowe Price, Allstate, those are just a few of a long list of companies that have pulled sponsorships. But the question for me is, do you actually hold advertisers accountable for the network's behavior? Do you blame Mercedes-Benz for advertising on Fox News? If no, you're already shaking your head.
I do not. It's more the network that I blame more than anything. You know that you have problematic on-air talent, even behind the scenes, people on staff or crew. You need to deal with it, and you need to let people know, not just company-wide, but even to some of your, you know, advertisers and your fan base. Like, look, these are things that we are aware of. We're taking steps toward, you know, rectifying this, that. So, yeah, this is not, for me, an advertiser's problem.
On the flip side, I typically, though, applaud advertisers who demonstrate, some sort of consciousness around an issue. And so I take that symbol of taking away the advertising dollars as a part of that. But also on the other side. Sometimes I notice they simply just move it from one program like,
to another.
Yeah, to another.
Right. Because they said they pulled him from his program, correct?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's sometimes it's not as strong of a statement. And so you have to pay attention. I have to pay attention to that before I give out points.
John, what about you?
Yeah, you know, I don't think these advertisers should be held responsible for the actions of some employees or staff members. You know, they have to make the right decisions that are according to their brand identity. And they don't know, you know, the inner workings of every employee on the staff of the organization that represents them. And just like the other comments, you know, we want to see how far that goes. And I think just to the previous comment, you know, some people, they shift things, you know, from one area to the next. And does that go far enough? I mean, those are the questions that we should ask.
You know, Celeste, I hold Fox News accountable for Fox News's horrible behavior on a lot of issues. I'm a former journalist, so I can't really watch them. But the advertisers do pay the bills. So I do like to see them. I wonder why they didn't pull it when Roger Ailes had his problem. I also realized that since I never watch Fox News, I don't know who advertises on Fox News. And so I was horrified to find out that both of our cars are by companies that had been supporting Bill O'Reilly's show.
So you actually do connect the advertiser with the show that they are on.
You don't have a Fox News if you don't have the advertising. You don't have any program except for NPR. If you don't have advertising, it does matter. You're enabling them. I don't blame the advertiser for Fox's bad behavior, but I do think that if people decide that their values don't match up with Fox News and they turn their back on the product being advertised,
you feel like that's fair game.
Absolutely.
All right. Remember when this video broke the internet?
Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style.
Okay, so no matter how much that's been overplayed, everyone still started dancing next month. But my problem is not with the video. It's with that term break the internet or going viral. So overused to the point of being irritating, right? I mean, so here's the question. Let's not use break the internet anymore since it's never really true. But what other phrases or words need to go? And let's go with you, John, out there in Milledgeville. What need do we need to stop saying?
So I'm on social media a lot, and forever I've always seen this word YOLO. I'm like, what does that even mean? Hashtag YOLO. It's like forever etched in my brain, and I'm trying to I finally figured it out. It's like you only live once, but every time I see YOLO, 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 I mean, it just gives me a spark.
Did Drake try to trademark that? And it's unsuccessfully?
No.
Yeah, I think he did. Okay, YOLO, that needs to die. What else?
So I'm sort of tired of WTF.
Which we're not going to say.
Which we're not going to say. And then not phrases, but a few words like really and slay.
So essentially all the words I say. That's fine. It's fine. I will go. I will actually take that a step further and say on fleek must go. Absolutely. 100% right now.
I hate to say this, but there are a lot of mostly older people who don't know how to use that phrase and use it anyway. So
that's true. That's why it's a problem.
Yes, that's why it has to go.
To rock meaning to wear. Everybody rocks everything. No one wears anything anymore. Drives me crazy. Also, albums are never released or they don't come out. They always drop, which would break them, so it doesn't make sense.
It wouldn't break them. They're digital.
I know, but you know, I'm old school.
You're showing your age there as well.
There's one I like, Kick Rocks.
What's that?
Get out of here.
So you like Kick Rocks?
Oh, I like
baby
Kick Rocks.
Baby bump. It is not a bump. I've been pregnant. It's a freaking beach ball that turns into a boulder.
Let's go.
Not a bump.
Come on.
Here we go. Just let it loose. Any more, John? I mean, we're ranting now. We're into it.
No, I'm laughing. I enjoy this.
I know. I know for sure that our listeners out there have lots of them to nominate. So if there is something that you said, Sam Burnham says, agree with WTF and on fleek, add FFS, which is another one which we are not going to explain what that stands for.
I gotta look that up now.
If you want to look it up, please do, but don't say it on your mic. But if you have more to nominate that need to just go away, then please do so. We are, for example, going to be talking about grammar in just a moment. And if you have a grammar pet peeve, we definitely want to hear about it. People have been tweeting. Delaney Kirk says the misuse of its for its. Also, per Curium says misplaced apostrophes. And Metro Cola says using less when you really mean fewer. Journalists are worst offenders. No offense. So you know how to reach us with your thoughts. You can call us at 404-500-9457. You can tweet us at OST Talk, or you can just find us on Facebook. Robbie Medwed says lightning, lightening, and capital. That just sounds like things that are misspelled, Robbie. and Michael says, what is the etymology of on fleek? Kalina, you want to handle that? Do you know the etymology?
You know what? If you have to ask, don't say it.
See, there you go, Michael. There you go. If
just
you don't
say
know how
it,
that
Michael.
Word got started, don't use the phrase. That's probably good life advice. Okay.
Yes.
Anyhow, it is Friday. We were hanging out in the break room, and we're going to talk about why Georgia is such a terrible place for millennials. I think we only have one in the room.
Only me.
Yes. What are you insinuating, Sam?
You were the one that was saying that records can't be dropped because they break.
My husband still buys CDs and they can break too.
Oh, and now also, I've been outed.
Also,
on the radio, nobody can see your age. That's the whole point.
Is it the whole point? Also, there's a grammar vigilante who's been working for 13 years correcting signs and billboards in the UK. Is he the hero we need? This is On Second Thought. This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headley. We are hanging out in the break room and we are chatting. There is a lot to talk about this week. We have coffee and conversation. The guests today are Tamika DePriest, Senior Director of Marketing at Emory University, John Jackson, both a veteran and a farmer in Milledgeville, Kalina Baller, filmmaker and podcast producer, and Natalie Pavelski, Vice President for Cater Communications. And as always, a big thank you to Savannah Coffee Roasters. They donate the coffee that we drink. It is delicious. They're online at savannahcoffee.com. Okay, as promised, let us talk about grammar pet peeves. Someone in the UK, and they have they call him the Banksy of grammar, has been going around for 13 years with a bucket of paint correcting grammar mistakes on the shop fronts in Bristol. This unnamed grammar vigilante goes out, paints over wrongly placed apostrophes and other bad punctuation. And here is the question. Is there a common grammatical mistake that might push you to take the law into your own hands?
I like Banksy's approach, or the would-be Banksy.
The would-be Banksy approach.
But I think earlier it's the possessive with no apostrophe, and it's with the apostrophe for the contraction. It is was mentioned, and so that's for me too. That's
yeah,
a stickler
that's what
for me
you.
Too.
Yeah, it would send you out there with a bucket of paint.
That and run-on sentences. Use a period for crying out loud.
Woof. From the director of marketing, Natalie, what do you think?
You know, as somebody who writes and edits for a living, I completely agree. I on signs, apostrophes are the big thing. It's like, look, one's possessive, one's plural possessive. It's not that
also
hard.
The quotation marks.
Quotation marks and them spellings drives me crazy.
Yeah.
For other things, subject verb agreement when people don't do it right. It's like, okay, a company is plural in British, but in American English, it's singular. Use a singular verb. Like, they say Harrods are having a sale, but Macy's is having a sale, right? people get that wrong all the time. And then yeah. parallel construction, where somebody, instead of just using a period, as suggested, goes on for so long that the grammar is so convoluted that the only way to fix the sentence is to blow it up and start again.
We found our grammar vigilante.
Yes.
I love this man. I do.
This is going to sound so bad. I don't care enough to, you know, okay, it depends on the context. So if I see a billboard sign from a large company and there's a grammatical error, I'll say, you know what, that's a problem. They should have people to correct that before the signs go out for print. But if I see someone online, like through Twitter or somebody, they make a couple of grammatical errors here and there. Or do you see what I'm saying? Like it's in someone's blog post or...
But
an op-ed or something.
I mean,
I'm just like, okay, they'll go back and fix it real quick. You know what I mean?
Millennials don't care about
or
grammar.
No, it's not that. I care, but it's in the context because we get out
Although
our information
it sounds
quickly.
Like Cody agrees with you. He or she tweets, correcting grammar is my biggest pet peeve. Communication and language change and evolve. Let's see what happens. John, what do you think?
Oh, I am the biggest. I'm still notorious for jacking up the English language. I just didn't care. So I could give you guys full-time jobs following me around, correcting everything I do. You know, but you know, honestly though, as long as you know the published material is proofread before heading out, I'm. Hey, speak all the Jabberwocky you want. You know, that's how I feel about it.
So we have a bunch that we obviously have a lot of people listening who care about grammar. Edward Osternall says, try to get the idiom right, please. It's set foot, not step foot. Catherine Keena says, oh, and this has already got Natalie just riled up. Catherine Keena says, I abhor amount of people instead of number of people. And then Catherine says again, in general, quantifying words like less, fewer, amount, number, etc. are widely misused. And the use of exclamation point to express enthusiasm in casual writing, although it's technically a misuse, she likes the use of the exclamation point. Even though that's a misuse. Ooh,
and
Natalie,
lots of F-bombs for just like for effect in writing these days.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
lazy. There's lots of great words in English. Use them.
So says our mom.
So are we concerned about people using or using grammar incorrectly because it's lazy or because we're just so, it was so pressed on us in school, like do it right, that when we see it wrong, done wrong, that
it's
we're just
like nails on the blackboard. In the spirit of full disclosure, I was an English major,
okay.
And so I do
okay.
love this stuff.
And see, that makes sense.
But also, we have a problem in America. Our writing skills have gone way down.
I understand that.
Way down.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, so let's talk about something that's gone way, way down, and that is sales at a lot of retail stores. The clothes at big stores like H&M and Zara are getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper.
They put out a dress that cost just $4.95. Think about that. That means you could take a $5 bill, scotch tape it over your genitals, and you'd be wearing a more expensive piece of clothing.
All right, do we really need all these stores? Maybe the problem is there's just too many of them. Payless Shoes filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy this past week, and 9 retailers have filed in the past 3-month period, which could set us up for a recent record. Urban Outfitters CEO Richard Haynes says there's too many retail chains, and there are too many stores. Do we think, and let's go to you first, John, are there just too many chains of stores?
You know, the American people buy a lot. Things are moving more towards the online sales and things like that. And so I don't necessarily think it's too many stores. I just think that we just have bad business models, you know. We're trying to squeeze production in every minute of the day. And, you know, our world is changing and business needs to do a better job at forecasting trends or create their own. That's how I feel about that.
Well, I'm kind of sad about stores having such difficulty because when I was coming up, that was our town hall, our town square. That was where you met your friends, where you hung out. That was your entertainment. But I was looking at my own personal Amazon Prime account, and get this, in 6 months, I placed 46 orders. And they have ranged everything from paper towels to replacement lens cap for my camera to tiaras for my daughter's birthday party to Def Leppard and Rolling Stone CDs for my aforementioned retro husband. And the thing is, if you're busy, if you had to buy all those things, you'd be running all over Atlanta. I can go click, click, and they're here in 2 days.
Yeah, I think so. Remember the technology boom and bust? Remember the sort of real estate boom and bust? We're in the retail boom and bust.
Wait, we're on the bus
on the
part.
Bus part of it. Yes. I mean, so in the words of Thomas Friedman, the author, the world is flat. You know, online technology has taken over. And so apparently there are too many stores.
Yeah, I guess if they're closing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, 1,250 from the limited. 120 from BCBG.
It's not just stores either. We got word that Applebee's is closing 40 to 60 stores, restaurants, excuse me. Kalina, what do you think?
I'm going to look at it from the angle of, I was raised in a household where, you know, I had a parent who was afraid to leave the house for a number of years. So having the option to have all of the goods and services you needed to be delivered via like Amazon Prime or whatever is really, really, really popular nowadays, especially with all of the terrorism and the PTSD and all of the things that are going on. People rather not venture out more than they feel like they need to or have to. So having, it's just, like you said, to me, it's a shift. It's just a shift of...
Lifestyle.
Lifestyle.
Yeah.
Really.
But even with food.
I mean, right, with delivery? Well, that's how New Yorkers have been living for a very long time.
But I just did Amazon Fresh the other day. Loved it. It was great.
See? Not just the millennial.
Yeah. Yeah, we were picking on your age too much.
It's okay. It's fine. I'll take it.
All right, so let's talk about another buying trend and lifestyle that is maybe dying off. Remember the big mansion that the Bluths built in Arrested Development?
You got a wonderful piece of property here that's going nowhere. So what I propose is a co-venture with your Sudden Valley Development. The first thing you might want to change, though, is the name. You know, Sudden Valley conjures up the image of a sinkhole, no?
I told that to my dad.
I'm thinking Paradise Gardens.
Okay, that was the archetypal McMansion. That's what you think of when you think McMansion. Enormous homes built very quickly, identically. They aren't always best quality. They are losing popularity. And according to Business Insider, home buyers are now looking for smaller houses with better construction. So who's sorry to see the McMansion go?
Nobody.
And don't let it be hitting the door on the way up. Don't let it be hit on the way up.
Don't let its butt be hit by the door
Thank
on the
you,
way
Celeste.
Out.
There we go.
I need more of this Savannah Roasters call.
First of all, that show is amazing. If anybody gets a chance to watch it anywhere, great show. Secondly, McMansions absolutely suck. They were always built poorly, and it's just too much space.
We have one on our street that's been for sale for like 5 years. It looks like Tony Soprano would have lived there. And it's just, nobody wants it.
It's just more space to hoard things.
To hoard money.
And have to clean.
But some neighborhoods, you're always going to have big houses. Like the one we live in, the dirt's too valuable. You're going to have big houses. But you can build houses that, you know, reflect the culture of the place, that have front porches and don't look like giant, ugly Tony Soprano boxes.
Well, on the other side of the spectrum are the tiny homes that are being built. And then... those would make me, I think, a little claustrophobic, some of the ones
I feel like there's a big difference between, say, a 4,000 foot home and a 500 square foot home. You know? John, what do you think?
I got like 5 kids, so I need the biggest house that I can get. Like high.
Fair
you know?
Enough.
So I'm all about the big house. But one of the things that I really like right now, we're seeing a lot of these houses that are coming down, but they're doing more green design. So I'm with that as well, as long as they're being responsible about their building. I always think that in America, there's always going to be a place for a big home. That's some people's like American dream.
All right. If you're just joining us, we're hanging out in the break room. You just heard John Jackson, farmer in Milledgeville, and veteran. Tamika DePriest is senior director of marketing at Emory University. Natalie Pavelski of Cater Communications, and Kalina Baller, a filmmaker and podcast producer. You know you can weigh in and join the break room at any time. Just call us at 404-500-9457 or tweet us. Okay, earlier this week, the Valdosta Daily Times published a story pointing out the differences in restrictions on sex offenders that are based on when they were convicted, the year. That article singles out one man and even gives his residence. It gave his address. Hmm. So is it ethical to single out those who've already been punished for crimes? Do sex offender laws maybe not go enough? Which one of these things?
I think the laws go pretty far, in my opinion. I have young children in my family. I would want to know. I would love to see a registry of sex offenders, and you do have that. You have that access. So I think they're punished
You're
enough.
You're okay with it.
Yeah.
Oh. They're punished enough.
I think they are. Leave I think it as this it is. Was yeah, I think this article and the people that published his, you know, this address. One person's address and they I think that went a little too far. He's already being punished. In my opinion. That's my opinion.
John?
You know, when we're talking about like 17 and 16 year olds dating and, you know, the person turns 18 and now is on a sex offenders list, you know, I think that's kind of a bit unfair. I mean, it happens a lot. But unfortunately for them, you know, they're grouped in with some of the worst people. And until our country, until we can use common sense to differentiate between those two things, I think they all need to be listed because I want to know who's living next to me.
Yeah, I mean, it is sort of broad. I mean, from sort of showing your stuff in public to the example that Kalina mentioned. And it's too varied. And even from state to state, I mean, here in Georgia, that's you have to carry that scarlet letter for a lifetime. Mm. Yet in Michigan, where I'm from, it's 15 years. Yeah. And in some places, it's 5 years. And it's a lot of variation and sort of unevenness in it. I'd like to actually see more, I hate to say this, federal
consistency,
mm-hmm, consistency and maybe even federal input into this.
All right, so we have to talk about this last one. Something that supposedly, sorry to use this, but broke the internet this week.
Now we live in an amazing, amazing world, and it's wasted on the crappiest generation of just spoiled idiots that don't care, because this is what people are like now. They got their phone, and they're like, ugh, it won't. Give it a second.
So that's a complaint about young people and their technology, but here's the thing that kind of, sorry, went viral. Oh, happy day. Racism is over. That is a clip from the new Pepsi commercial. Kendall Jenner is shown in the front of a protest march. She faces off with a line of police, and then she gives one of the cops a Pepsi. He smiles, and everything is good. Pepsi has pulled this ad, but how did this make it to air?
I think what they were trying to do, this is my guess, I think the most famous soda ad of all time is
Mean Joe Green.
Oh no, even before that. Oh. I'd like to buy the world
buy
of Coke.
The world yeah. of Coke.
Mm-hmm. And it was at a similar time in our history. There were, you know, protests in the street. Things were very divided. It was seen as a way of kind of bouncing off that, but bringing people together. However, they didn't have civil rights protesters and Vietnam protesters giving the police a Coke and all being well. I mean, this was just a tone deaf.
And can we just start with Kendall Jenner facing off against the police? I mean, that is should have been a yellow flag along with all the others. I mean, protest at this time and how serious it's been around these issues. I mean, it just was poor judgment. Somebody should have saw that in the treatment is what I'm saying.
I mean, were there no people of color, were there no millennials, were there no marginalized groups who have been actively on the front line sitting in this room?
But the amazing thing about it is, you know, obviously the most of the attention has been how this is a slap in the face for Black Lives Matter and for the civil rights movement. But the amazing thing is this is a very equal opportunity offender. If you've marched for anything, if you've marched against abortion in Washington, if you joined the women's marches anywhere, if you're a millennial who did Occupy Wall Street, if you're a baby boomer who did Vietnam, this is saying, you know, if you just would have poured the other guy a soda, you could have solved
John,
it.
John, you can jump in here. We have a minute left. What do you think?
Yeah, so I don't know. I have mixed emotions about this. I saw that ad and I thought it was very powerful. I thought Pepsi was more appealing to get their brand more aligned to the social movement that millennials possess, and more so than the actual, you know, political consequences. It's more about, hey, you know what? We want to be the brand that, you know, goes attacks political issues like head on, because millennials are very socially engaged in our time. And so I didn't look at it as anything bad against the Black Lives Movement or anything else like that. I thought that it was, you know, a group of or tons or
We got to cut it off there. We're out of time.
Oh,
that's okay. Absolutely. John Jackson, veteran farmer in Milledgeville, Kalina Baller, a filmmaker and podcast producer, Natalie Pavelski of Cater Communications, and Tamika DePriest of Emory University. Let the conversation continue. It's on Second Thought from GPB News.